As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello, this is Pod on the Time, The Athletic's Newcastle United podcast. I'm Taylor Payne, and I'm joined by two of the finest journalists that this podcast has to offer. George Coggan and Chris Wolf are both here. How are we doing, George? Are we all right?
I'm glad it's not last week anymore for a variety of reasons. I've got a sinking feeling in my stomach that Chris may provide some further detail. But yeah, what with locking myself out of my own house, being part of a really chaotic podcast that would have had listeners switching off in droves.
I mean, that assumes that they were listening in droves in the first place, but maybe.
That's very true. Drove is a good segue as well, as I'm sure Chris will explain.
Chris, how are you? You all right?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm feeling like a very good Samaritan this Monday, because on Friday, George and I met David Oyedede down in the centre of Newcastle for a coffee to discuss ideas going forward. And I'd got the bus into town. It was obviously awful weather, absolutely peeing it down. And I just said I'd get the bus home. But George, being the very kind man that he is, absolutely insisted that, no, I've got the car, I'll give you a lift home. So first of all, he'd parked in the RVI multi-story car park and forgot which floor he'd parked on. We came out at floor 8 and he was like, no, it's not floor 8. We went up another 3 floors and then he realised that it was floor 8, so we had to walk back down to eventually find his car. He was adamant to me it wasn't floor 8, even though he said previously. So then George gives me a lift home very kindly. I get in my house. 10 minutes later, phone rings and George is on the other line. He's just like, so I've just been going up the hill back towards my house and just realised there's not enough petrol in the car and the car's broken down on going up towards Gosforth on Church Road next to South Gosforth Metro. And so I had to, I was excited because for the first time ever, I got to go and fill up a jerry can with petrol and then go and save George.
Oh, so
I've never done that before. So that was great. But then it was seeing the image of as I came round the corner just next to South Gosforth Metro and George stood hapless by the side of this car, just looking absolutely ludicrous, as he usually does. And yes, so rather than, he'd given me a lift home, but then I had to come and rescue him. So that was nice.
I can't even, I've got nothing. Sometimes you've just got to, like, hold your hands up and accept responsibility and do your best to, you know, move on. And
that's brilliant.
Yeah. Chris, I mean, that was so it was incredibly stressful. I did just manage to pull off this very steep hill. I'd still be there now if I hadn't, like, with miles of traffic behind us, and a very nice person helped push the car to the side of the road. That's never happened to me before. The worst bit about it, though, and also the best, but the worst bit was Chris turning in, and I saw his car, but about 3 seconds before I saw his car, I saw Chris's shit-eating grin, knowing that this was something that I was going to have to live with forever. But yeah, got me out of the big. And then the next day I go out for a run and I tore my calf. That was the other thing. So I'm just very glad. I'm glad to put last week to bed. Thank you, Chris. Thank you for everything you've done. I think we're just all prepared and happy to move on and never mention any of that ever again.
If anyone's been listening to the podcast in recent weeks, it's felt like George has been running on empty anyway. And I think we've pretty much put that to bed now, yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good, yeah. I'm all good. And the world is a good place when Bruno Guimaraes is smiling. That's how I feel at the moment. And he certainly is. Right then, shall we crack on, chaps? There's plenty to talk about.
Let's do it. Come on.
Let's do it.
Addy Hawking.
Some very candid stuff from Eddie Howe about the season's injury crisis in his Forest pre-match press conference, Chris.
Yes, so Howe was actually asked about, not issues at Newcastle, but going forward, it was sort of a question about will it take a few years for Newcastle, given FFP, to get where they want to be. And Howe was actually quite honest and said, even in 3 to 4 years' time, given the restrictions of FFP, we may not have the team that everyone wants. But he also discussed this season as a whole and things to have learned from it. And he used the term, the word mistakes, and referring to various things, including injuries. And he was pushed further on this and started discussing how quite a lot of them have been freak injuries. Some of them have been due to sort of workload, which has been because of the injuries and suspensions that have already been issues there for them. But then he also said that we have to learn from it and in future seasons that maybe we will have to tweak things slightly, and that every single injury we have checked out. And I mean, there's been an audit of the medical department, as it has been of every single part of the club, an ongoing audit which really started post takeover but continues. And yeah, it was just interesting because Howard never said that before this season. He'd never actually offered that up, that he thought that mistakes had been made. He talked about re-injuring, players being re-injured. I mean, Isak's had several groin injuries. You've had Joe Willock, who's been injured a few times, but he never actually used the word mistake is quite loaded and was something that he offered up. So that was just interesting of his own accord that he basically said that.
So he was forthright about injuries pre-match, but he was accused of being less than candid about Anthony Gordon's fitness. When it got to the post-match press conference, Chris, you asked him about that, didn't you?
Well, I think my words were he hadn't trained to that point. He trained yesterday and trained well and felt fine. But he did well to come through the game, considering he obviously left last week in a protective boot.
To take people inside this sort of situation, so Friday's pre-match press conference, the press conference started with him being asked about Anthony Gordon, and he said, he hasn't trained this week. We don't think the injury is serious. We're very hopeful he could be back sooner rather than later. To which the follow-up question was then, when is he going to train? And his response was, it's slightly unclear at this stage. We don't know. Alexander Isak, he actually ruled out of the match, I accept that we, as potentially as a collective media, maybe presented it in a slightly different way, but every single person who left that room thought that Eddie Howe had ruled Anthony Gordon out of the game. It led on Sky, it led on BBC News, it was the way we presented it. Basically, it seemed that Eddie Howe, and we'd also had it from elsewhere, Jacob reported, as we said on the podcast last Thursday, that people close to Gordon didn't think that he was going to be available at the weekend. So that was the sort of assumption. And then it turns out that as everyone gets off the team bus, there is Anthony Gordon ready and available in the match day squad. Not only that, he then is in the starting lineup an hour before kickoff. And Eddie Howe actually said in his NUFC TV interview, because I think he was a bit perturbed by how some of this had been reported, he said, I never lied. Now, he's right, at no point did he actually exactly say that Anthony Gordon is not available, but I mean he was probably disingenuous at best about the sort of training situation, because seemingly Newcastle then went out and trained and Anthony Gordon was there, and he probably knew that was going to be the case at that stage. But B, everyone else who left the room thought that was the case, and this is a situation we're getting with Eddie Howe injuries. You just have no idea. And I mean, the week before we had Jason Tindall saying that Alexander Isak had a chance of being available, so this is just the sort of muddle that we got into. But yeah, it was a big positive for Gordon to be in there, but it was also a very weird situation all around.
Now, I want to ask you about this, George, because this, to me as a fan, I find this hilarious, right? I think this is really funny. As journalists, this must boil your piss immensely when you're sitting in a press conference and you think the information is one way and it turns out to be another way. I mean, he didn't lie. He told fibs. Kind of fibs, but also you now know don't pick your FPL team based on anything that Eddie Howe says, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I find it hilarious too. I mean, I don't do as many press conferences as Chris does. Now, I'm trying to sort of put myself back, I don't know, like 20 years ago, if I was in this situation where you're asking a manager a question and you continue to get sort of disingenuous answers, and, you know, would I sort of feel younger and more angry and things like that. But I mean, I suppose we have to remember that the audience for those answers isn't us. it's the opposition team.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
And that's, and you know, it's part of the pantomime. Now, I remember when, I think it was when he celebrated his 2-year anniversary as manager, he was asked to, he said, congratulations on your 2-year anniversary. I think it was Luke Edwards, our colleague and friend, who sort of said it, and 2 years of telling Porky's about Newcastle's injury situation, and he replied, "Thank you very much. That means a lot." he's not deliberately trying to mislead the media. He is deliberately trying to mislead the opposition. And as Chris said, Jason Tindall had done it the other way with Isak the week before. It's on us if we take it seriously. Now, I'll put this into a very different context. When Joe Kinnear was manager of Newcastle, it took a couple of quite hard lessons for me to understand that basically everything that came out of his mouth was just sort of fantasy. And again, I'm sure part of that was deliberate. I'm sure he was laughing his head off about that with Mike Ashley behind the scenes. And I think we were the target for that. But it was things like, you know, oh, yeah, you know, the takeover's going to happen next week. Kevin Keegan's waiting behind the wings to come back as manager with Shearer as his number two. There's a D-Day for this, blah, blah, blah. It was quite a good lesson as a journalist where I would never come away from a press conference writing anything as fact anymore. So in other words, Newcastle United's takeover D-Day is happening on Friday would become Joe Kinnear has stated that Newcastle United's... And so... Probably as journalists, every time we write an injury story about Eddie Howe's Newcastle, it should be Eddie Howe has said that Anthony Gordon is unlikely to be back. And it's like really clumsy when you write that. But, you know, I think we should all know by now that for him to say it's unclear when Anthony Gordon would return to training and it was effectively 10 minutes later is, you know, but... I don't mind that at all. I think I might have done a few years ago, but I'm interested to know if Chris takes it seriously or can see the funny side. I don't know. I mean, it is so ludicrous. I don't think you can be angry about it, can you?
I can see the funny side, and I admit that in the end, when we look back, because all of us sat, when we saw that Anthony Gordon had come off the team bus, we all then went, I immediately went back to look at the quote to be like, look, he said that he's going to... It's like, actually, you look back at the quote, he never actually definitively said that, whereas he did say Alex is out when he was referring to Alexander Isak. But at the same time, for everyone to have left the room and thought the same thing, that was certainly the impression given. Yeah, I can see the funny side, but at the same time, if he's going to get... If there's going to be frustration internally at the club, as there seems to be of it, it's like you've reaped what we've sown there. That's essentially what is likely to happen at some point. I've mentioned it before. I've said before, eventually this injury sort of thing will catch up on you. And I understand entirely why he does it. But at the same time, I think he could have, again, answered the question in a different way without ruling him out or ruling him in and without being slightly, as I say, disingenuous in some ways about it.
I think it's important that managers shouldn't lie. I mean, I think that they shouldn't be caught lying. And I think he...
And he didn't lie.
No.
Said, you go back and he didn't actually lie.
No, I think most of the time he's very clever. And most of the time you ask him a question about injuries. I mean, not when someone immediately gets injured. It's always about who might be playing or not playing that weekend. You know, he doesn't sort of give misinformation straight after an injury. He smiles when he's asked the question and answers the question, and we all smile when we ask or answer the question. He's not going to tell us. It's about protecting the team. It's about having a bit of a surprise for the opposition. And I think if you take it in that sense, it's absolutely fair game. And you do have to remember that, you know, that a lot of the time, the stuff that happens around managers is pantomime. It's you know, they're sending messages out, often to their own players, often to their own fans, sometimes to the opposition, and it's just part of the smokescreen.
Absolutely right. Then let's crack on and talk about the football, chaps, because there's a lot to get through.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So we spoke last week about Newcastle finding a new shape, finding solutions to their problems, and Kieran Trippier showed that he could potentially be one of those solutions, inverting slightly in possession and pushing Bruno further forward. It was a cracking start from the lads, wasn't it, Chris? They were dominant in possession and they were looking dangerous.
Yeah, so I mean, I'd said how I'd been told that Newcastle had been attempting something different in training, and was it going to be a switch of system? Was it going to be? And when the team sheet came out, it actually looked like, oh no, actually he's just reverted to, he's just, all he's done is brought Callum Wilson in, so he's got an out-and-out striker, but the system's going to be the same.
I was quite disappointed it wasn't the flying V from the Mighty Ducks, you know, that just get everyone in a V and just run up the pitch in a line. Quite disappointed, wasn't that?
But then within, I mean, actually from the kickoff, you could see that the system was going to be different because Lewis Miley was stood in the deep-lying position and Bruno actually took the kickoff to give it back to him. And it turned out that Bruno Guimaraes was nominally the sort of number eight on the left-hand side, but really, actually, he almost had a free roll. And at times in the first half, he was basically playing as number 10. I don't know if that came through on the TV, but that's basically what it was, that him and Longstaff were nominally number eight, but Longstaff tended to be a little bit deeper even than him. And then in possession, what happened was Lewis Miley was the number six, but it became, and I've had people tweeting to ask me to say this, so I'm going to say it, it became a double pivot. Four, two, it was almost a 3-2-4-1
in possession.
Listen to the excitement
in his voice, George.
I know.
Listen to him.
I know.
This is the good stuff, isn't it?
But in possession, it was almost essentially a 3-2-4-1, and it was that Kieran Trippier came inside as an inverted fullback. Now, that's something that, obviously, Man City have led the way with this, but Arsenal do it, various other teams do it, and Newcastle did practice it throughout pre-season. There have been occasions when Kieran Trippier has done it. I mean, as you're going to hear in some of the audio afterwards, Eddie Howe suggested to me that this is something that they've been doing regularly in matches. Now, I think that's, again, he has done it on occasion, but it was how visible it was and how often and how prominent he was in that role during that first half against Nottingham Forest that made this so different. The way that Eddie Howe tried to combat the balance, which he says Newcastle lack with the present midfield, he says all the individuals are playing well, but the three of them don't necessarily blend together, was essentially to add someone else into that midfield at times, and that was Kieran Trippier to aid Lewis Miley in those deep line positions.
So Bruno has a 6 or an 8. Have a little listen to this. Chris asked him if Bruno could play in that advanced role more often in future. This is brilliant.
Yeah, he can play in that position, absolutely, no doubt, and he can play there very well, but then we need to find a solution for the 6, and that needs to work for the team. So I'm always stuck in that situation where I'm trying to work out what's best for the team, not for the individual.
And I mean, another tweak seemed to be the Kieran Trippier was coming inside as almost an inverted fullback. Is that something you've been working on too?
That's something that's been there throughout the season. It was more relevant today during that first half, but that's something that's been in as part of our game this year.
That's a dig, George, isn't it? That's a dig.
Again, this is the other regular feature about Eddie's press conferences: disingenuous about injuries and absolute disdain for Christopher Woff, my rescuer. So I have to stick up for him. But totally take him at his word. But it was so noticeable, wasn't it, how Trippier was stepping inside like that? And you know, the reason for why we were discussing the need to make a change, or possible need to make a change, the reason why that happened is that, you know, Newcastle still aren't finding a way to protect their own defence, and there's been much made of this graphic that was shown on the Sky Sports coverage, which is absolutely astonishing, you know, before and after Nick Pope's injury, where Newcastle are conceding the most goals in the Premier League. They've gone from, the tightest defence in the Premier League before then. They've faced more shots than any other team since Nick Pope's injury. And yeah, I think that sort of Trippier thing is to try and find a way of bringing some solidity into that midfield when you've lost Joe Linton's sort of muscle, when you've lost his aggression, when you've got two relatively similar players in Miley and Longstaff, and trying to fiddle with it. I mean, ultimately, I'm not sure we can say it's worked because that those frailties are still there. But I thought it was fascinating.
And then they did change it later on as well, didn't they? Pretty much a training ground masterpiece for the first goal, Chris. And we're off to the races, aren't we? Bruno playing further up. It pays off almost immediately. It's a lovely ball in by Trippier. And that is a stunning finish with the outside of the right foot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it directly came from the fact that Bruno Guimarães was playing higher up. And we'll come on to that later on because I want to talk about the number six, number eight. Because this is almost exactly the same goal as Newcastle scored against Brentford last season in terms of the same set-piece work. It actually looked like, and you mentioned the before about possession. Newcastle, I think it was the first 15 minutes, they had 84% possession or something like that. They had really controlled proceedings without creating a lot of chances. But then what I didn't understand from a Forest point of view is it surely Forest have watched Newcastle, and you know if Miguel Almiron is taking a corner, Miguel Almiron is not. He's not swinging in the box, and Kieran Trippier is stood back at the halfway line, but nobody goes anywhere near him. And then actually, I think Almiron underhits the when he's first under pace. I thought, oh, what, this is absolutely crap. This is going to be, because it looked like the Forest player almost managed to get back, but there's a little check from Anthony Gordon, a little block, as there is from Dan Byrne for Bruno Guimarães' winner as well, just outside the box. Dan Byrne does exactly the same.
That one, but we'll talk about that later.
Exactly, yeah. And so then Kieran Trippier, somehow having sprinted to make sure he gets it, puts in what is an absolutely majestic ball to the back post, where a late arriving Bruno Guimarães comes and meets it first time volley, wonderful technique, sort of almost like flicks the ball back across Matt Sells. Yes, Matt Sells was in goal for Nottingham Forest, the former Newcastle United briefly goalkeeper. And that is now, I believe, the sixth set-piece goal Newcastle have scored in the last four matches. So they've scored from five corners and one free kick. So really, this is a potent weapon for them now. They really are scoring from it. They score later on, obviously, from Fabian Scher, which is also from a set piece. And I think what's interesting about that is as well that in those four games, they've scored 12 goals. None of them have been from a recognised striker. The only one from a forward, really, was Harvey Barnes. Sean Longstaff has scored three goals. Bruno Guimarães has scored two. Dan Byrne's got one. Scher's got three. Trippier's got one. Barnes has got one. There's been an own goal. So basically, Newcastle are now sharing the goals around, as they very much need to, given the injuries to their strikers, as we're going to come on to.
Yeah, it's an absolutely brilliant set piece, wasn't it? I'm just absolutely fabulous. Have to make mention of Trippier reaching double figures for assists. The first Newcastle player to do so in the Premier League season since Laurent Robert. And again, this just sort of reiterates just how important he is to the team and why Newcastle were so adamant that he should stay in January. I love the fact that in his post-match interview, Bruno paid tribute to Mad Dog.
The Mad Dog, he called him. The Mad
the
Dog.
Mad Dog. Yeah,
the Mad Dog. I do think this is important because, you know, although we, you know, we kind of joke about Tyndall and the Mahogany God, as I love to call him, but he is a really important part of the backroom team, and set pieces are his domain, and Newcastle have been really good at them. So huge tribute to pay to him. And Chris mentioned it there. I think now is the time to talk about this sort of Bruno debate. And in fact, you wrote about Bruno 6 or 8 afterwards, Chris, because he was picked out by Alan from work on Match of the Day for his general involvement in the game. And from where I was sitting at home, it was like, oh, he's further up the pitch. He might be sort of quarterbacking a bit less, but he's involved, he's intrinsic to it. But you've got a slightly different take, haven't you?
Well, I do and I don't. I mean, my the piece that I've written basically argues that Bruno Guimarães is absolutely vital to Newcastle wherever he plays. And that is evident from the fact that since he's made his Premier League debut, Newcastle played seven matches, haven't won any of them. And that isn't coincidental. That's why there's such fear about him getting this 10th yellow card. He's got to survive another 8 matches, otherwise he will miss 2 games.
I mean, that's not going to happen, is it, Chris?
Well, every match you go into it thinking this is going to be the game where he did it. And it's amazing that he hasn't the last few, given the volume of yellow cards he had previously. But Eddie Howe sees Bruno Guimarães as like his perfect number 6. And for so long, Bruno, certainly privately, but also publicly, has talked about how he sees himself as a number 8. He wants to be higher at the pitch. He wants to score more goals, as he did during the second half of the first season when he signed, which really, throughout his entire career, is not something he's done very often. He isn't prolific. He never has been, other than that period there. There's this idea that you put him further forward because that's where he does his best work. That's where he can hurt teams. But for Newcastle, he isn't like a normal defensive midfielder, number 6 or centre back, as George would say, number 6 is, but as they call it in the current game, he isn't that sort of player. But what he does is he ghosts into sort of number eight spaces or the spaces there at certain points, and because people don't expect him to be there. And that's where he can really hurt opponents. That's what he did against Luton when he had those two wonderful crosses. He came forward from that deep lying midfield position. Now, if you look at Saturday's game, I thought he did relatively well, but the two goals he actually scores, one of which is from a set piece, the other is actually as he's moved back to the number six position. He'd already been moved back into that, and he wins the ball high at the edge of the area and then scores the wonderful goal. But actually, his involvements in the match were fewer. He didn't, Newcastle's XG was actually significantly below Forest. I think it was like a third of whatever Forest was. It was like 0.5 and Forest was like 1.58. He didn't create loads of opportunities. Now, that's not having to go to him. I thought he was very, very good, but he actually had the sixth most touches of any Newcastle player, whereas usually he's only behind Kieran Trippier for touches in a match. He had the sixth highest number of passes as well, where again, he's usually only behind Kieran Trippier and Sven Botman for that figure. So he wasn't actually on the ball as much as he is. And this is a very small sample size because it's an hour from Saturday's game. I'm not saying he shouldn't play there more often, but it was interesting when Howe was asked about both in response to me, but also there's, he said Bruno gets targeted sometimes, so to shift him there is to put him in a different role so that you can free up space elsewhere and maybe you will get on the ball. And I think that that's what you're going to see going forward. I think he's still likely to be the number six more often than not, probably certainly at St. James's Park, and then away from home, shifted around from time to time and have that midfield continuing to switch around. I don't think it's that he just moves to number eight now. He can clearly do a role in both, but I actually think his best work, albeit the body of evidence is far is significantly higher for that, is probably in a deep lying position still.
Just makes me more frustrated listening to Chris talk about that again, the Tonali situation, because obviously the idea was that the two of them would revolve their roles in midfield. If one goes forward, the other holds back and things like that. And again, we didn't see that in all its glory at the start of the season because Tonali was still kind of getting to grips with things. But, you know, now, a few months down the line, you can only sort of imagine what the two of them would have been like together. The team is like a jigsaw again, isn't it? All the pieces aren't quite there or they're not in the right places. And so I think it's totally understandable that the team has to be mixed around like this. When Bruno plays, he's absolutely the most important player on the pitch. He always tends to be. It's everything good about the team, and a way of kind of maximizing his talent is obviously really important.
I mean, in that post-match interview, Bruno Guimarães, was quite a long one. He was also asked about sort of his celebration after his second goal, which is why he jumped up on the advertising boards and he puts his fingers into his ears. Now, basically, he said that that's to sort of almost because people talk about him too much. And then he was asked, is that referencing your future? And he said, yes. And I thought that was intriguing because then he's asked about his sort of future. And a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, you know, he silences critics and things like that. He wasn't exactly committal long term for Newcastle. He basically said, I'm very happy here. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But he didn't say I definitively will be here. And also, I sort of make reference to this in my piece as well. It's like, it's part of that noise, it doesn't just come from nowhere. Part of that noise does come from Bruno Guimarães has some people around him who are very keen for his name to continue to be out there. PSG in January, for example. Real Madrid in Barcelona in previous windows. And this is the sort of, there is a reason why we believe there is a release clause in his contract as well. That this is, it's Bruno Guimarães has been brilliant for Newcastle and he is fully committed to them. But as we've said previously, the idea that he could be sold to help fund a rebuild this summer or in future windows is something which is still there, and performances like this make you see exactly why that could be the case. So I just thought it was interesting that he's talking about the noise, as players often do, but it's like that noise comes from somewhere, and there's at least some people around you who are helping to add to that noise as well.
Absolutely. So Eddie's formation was a bit of a gamble, wasn't it? We already had looked a little bit suspect on the counter-attack, and Forrest's third big chance on the break saw Alanga level the score. Now, I've seen blame for this one attributed to three different players, George, on social media. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Lewis Miley should do better. Dubravka comes too quickly. Dan Burn gets burned completely by Anthony Alanga for pace.
Yeah, and so, I mean, so the other kind of section of Eddie Howe's press conference on Friday, apart from, you know, his regular ding-dongs with Chris and telling Porkies about injuries, was sort of fielding questions about Dan Burn and Dan Burn's form. Obviously, we go back to the Luton game, gave away a penalty, struggled and, you know, sort of seemed to be a lightning rod for the team's ills. Eddie Howe listened to all of that and then did absolutely what he always does, which is pick Dan Burn at left back. And it was an interesting decision and bold in some ways because Alanga had troubled Dan with his pace in the 3-1 game at St James's on Boxing Day. And there were moments, again in this match, Alanga got past Dan and then, of course, the equaliser comes and you're thinking, oh dear, it's going to be another one of those days. I want to make reference to somebody on Twitter who, before kickoff, had said to me, can't wait for Dan Burn to start, ruin my weekend, and then to be told by George Culkin that he's actually a really nice guy and gave ice creams to all the kids in Newcastle. I found that slightly irritating. But I think we all sort of feared the worst at that point. But, you know, Newcastle, as they do when they're playing well, found a way to deal with it. It was interesting that Anthony Gordon kind of comes across later in the match with his pace, and they were sort of doubling up on Alanga at various points. I think we mentioned the big block that Dan did for Bruno's second goal. I think by the time you get to the end of the game, you think, okay, well, that made sense.
He made a big interception in injury time.
I made a huge interception at injury time. I am a fully paid-up member of the Dan Burn fan club, but you know, I sort of think by the end of the game, you have to give him credit for coming through it and coming through it strongly. And I don't think you can argue that the decision was at fault, but there were some hairy moments. Dan is not a left-back, and when he's up against quick wingers, there can be trouble, but they found a way to deal with it. So yeah, I just wanted to make that point.
I mean, that goal as well, the first Forest equaliser, was basically almost exactly how you would say to score against Newcastle if you were going to come up with the way of how can Newcastle really be affected on the counter attack. That was precisely it. I mean, Newcastle actually have the ball in the top right-hand corner of the pitch in the Forest half. They give it away. Three passes later, one of which is to Morgan Gibbs-White, who ran the game at St. James's Park in acres of space in the middle of the pitch. He then plays through Anthony Alanga, who's beaten Byrne for pace, beats Botman for pace. Then Martin Dubravka, who quite often doesn't come, has decided to come and is actually left outside of his area in no man's land and can't really intervene, so the ball is put underneath him. But I thought what was interesting in Eddie Howe's post-match press conference as well is that when he was asked about, he did talk about the balance still not being right and Newcastle being too open at times. And he was almost defending his own back four and kept on talking about the midfield being too open. So he himself recognises that even the changes he made, they're still going to have to alter things going forward, because it was in possession. They were in that system, and then immediately they give the ball away and suddenly Forest look very, very dangerous, and they've scored more fast breaks than any team this season. So it wasn't really unsurprising, given that they'd done it twice at St. James's, that they were going to do it again in that match there.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Fabian Scher with another goal, George. Another set piece, and that's a serious finish from him, isn't it? Lovely, controlled and calmed half volley in the bottom corner. Only Longstaff, Wilson, Isak and Gordon have scored more goals than him this season. Now that's three.
Yeah, brilliant. As Chris said, it's really important that other bits of the team chip in, particularly when there's problems with the strikers, as there has been, and a serious finish from a seriously sexy guy.
Absolutely. The goal settled my nerves a little bit, though, didn't it? There was a bit of a tricky patch. And unfortunately, Hudson-Odoi's shot deflects in off Lewis Miley. And we're reeling a little bit, aren't we? And things start to turn a little bit. Forest come out the second half. They're very aggressive. They have a few chances. And then there's a big penalty shout, isn't there, Chris? If one of you goes through. Alan Shearer thought it was a penalty on Match of the Day. I wasn't sure when I first saw it. He hasn't got control of the ball, has he? Where do you land on it?
It's not so much the control of the ball where I'm not so sure about. I think Botman might get a little bit of a touch on him, and then Dubravka possibly. It's sort of the way that it doesn't look. It looks like a one-year, almost puts his leg into Dubravka as well. I think it's one of those ones in the way that VAR should work, where if it's given on the field, it shouldn't be overturned. Yeah. And if it isn't given on the pitch, then therefore it also shouldn't be. And so therefore, I think the correct decision stood. And there was a lot of analysis on Match of the Day that Anthony Taylor, the referee, wasn't close enough to the action. And there probably was a shred of truth in that. But more of my issue with, if we take, regardless of whether it's a penalty or not, was how abysmal the whole spell of play was. Matt Sells has the ball, punts a long ball forward. Sven Botman's caught in basically no man's land, doesn't go, and neither him nor Cher go up to win the ball. He's then beaten for pace. And then again, at this point, Dubravka, maybe because he'd been burned the first time when he came for the opening goal, doesn't come, ends up staying on his line. And then really, I mean, he should score. Really, Newcastle should concede at that point. And it was very, very basic defending issues there. Again, structural issues where it just looked terrible all around. That was more my issue with it. I understand Forest fans may argue to the blue in the face should have been a penalty. Forest should have scored regardless, and that was because of Newcastle's defensive failings in that moment.
For me, I think Awoniyi takes a shit touch and he knows it's going out of play and he kind of leaves his leg in. That's how it looked to me on repeated viewings, but I can see why they would be a little bit disgruntled about that. Eddie Howe did say, though, we showed our character and determination to win the game. Bruno, with that last goal, George, you've already mentioned Dan Burn's stellar work of being a human brick wall on the edge of the box. It's a canny finish as well, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we didn't mention the quality of Bruno's first goal, which was, you know, with the outside of his boot.
Oh, I did.
Did you?
Yeah, and no, I said it was a beautiful
finish.
Yeah,
I mean, I wasn't listening. I'll rephrase that then. I mean, I wasn't listening at the start of the pod when we talked about Bruno's brilliant finish, so I just thought I should draw attention to that.
Yes.
Just in case either of you two didn't bother. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that character and determination, it's a sort of cliche, but I think what happened the week before, where they've gone ahead twice and been pegged back twice, and then exactly the same things happened again, you know, there were sort of echoes of that, and they had to kind of grit their way through it, and they did it. So I think that's an important statement. And then you look at the form in general, and the form in general has been decent. It's just the way Newcastle are getting to that form has been like absolutely all over the place. I mean, I said in our sort of immediate match piece that Chris and I compiled after the match that, you know, it's like chaos is their identity. It's not an intensity anymore. It's like chaos.
Yeah.
And it totally is. They're conceding so many goals. They're scoring goals. I don't think this is like Eddie Howe saying, okay, this is my inner Kevin Keegan coming out here. Let's just
do this.
Are
you not entertained,
George? Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Because I think he would be as irritated as hell by those concessions.
Yeah.
But if they find a way through and pick up wins, then that's good. It just feels a little bit unsustainable at the moment.
Yes, it absolutely does. And it's not a Newcastle match, Chris, is it? Without at least one more injury worry. Two this time, though. Jacob Murphy had a bit of a tight calf and was stuck on the sidelines. Callum Wilson's arm as well. That's a bit of a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah, so Murphy was, during the warm-up, I think that Han Howe said he used the term unusable from being unable to bring him on. And then Callum Wilson, the physios rushed on at the end. And Howe said the good news is that the pretty sure it wasn't his shoulder, but it seemed to be an arm muscle injury. Again, he said he didn't know how serious at that point they were going to look into it. But, I mean, it's just frustrating and concerning that basically Wilson certainly can't stay fit at the minute. Obviously, Isak unavailable, a doubt for next weekend still at this stage. Newcastle can't buy a break in attack, and it's becoming a real concern because, as George and I have both said, other players have stepped up, but eventually you need your centre-forwards to be on the pitch. They make such a difference. And I also thought throughout the game, and that I think this is partly because he hasn't played that much recently, I thought that Wilson wasn't quite, well, he certainly wasn't prominent in proceedings. He didn't really have a chance of a note. And that's, again, he needs consistent football to be able to build up that form again.
He looks like he's lacking a bit of sharpness, Chris.
He looked very immobile, I thought. Some of that, you know, I think that's totally understandable after time out. And I think he just needs that regular playing to kind of get sharp. But he didn't look like the player that we know he is at Forest, so hopefully this injury is okay and it doesn't stop him being involved against Bournemouth. And yet again, hopefully we see the benefit of more minutes. But yeah, it wasn't the Callum Wilson we know and love, was it?
Certainly not. We are only 5 points worse off than we were at this time last season, though. It's not quite Armageddon, is it, Chris?
No, I mean, as George touched upon, it's very odd the way that you sort of assess how Newcastle are at the minute, because you look at previous results and they've actually won the last four away games in all competitions when they basically couldn't buy a win away from home until 2024, and now they've done very well there. They've scored at least twice in each of their past seven matches in all competitions, but they've also had no clean sheets in seven league games. They've conceded 18 during that time. They had to score four at home to get a draw against Luton. They've had to score three away from home to beat Nottingham Forest. That doesn't feel sustainable. And speaking to people in around the coaching staff, basically they've said that we know that that is an issue. We know defensively we simply have to sort that out, because we can't just keep getting ourselves out of this position. And suddenly the league table does look a heck of a lot more positive. I mean, Newcastle are seventh. They're ahead of West Ham on goal difference, but they're 5 points behind Man United in sixth. And when people have said that about the five, I've seen a lot about that 5 points, and that is interesting in itself, given that you compare one season to the other. The difference is that this season there are a lot more teams higher up who have a greater number of points, so getting into that top five is going to be more difficult. Aston Villa have 46 points there in fifth. Newcastle have 36 in seventh. At this point last season, Newcastle, after 24 games, had 41 points. They were sixth. But Spurs, who'd played two more matches, had 45 points in fourth. There's a difference in terms of the way the league table is, and that's the problem Newcastle have, is that because of their teams are performing better, because Liverpool have recovered this season, because Aston Villa are doing well, because Man United are doing well, there is a larger gap to bridge. But it does put into context how well, relatively results-wise, Newcastle have actually recovered and done. And I think basically, if you actually take out certainly December and maybe it's the first week in January, actually, for large parts of the season, beyond the first month and then that period in winter, Newcastle have gone on some very good runs, and hopefully they're going to go on one between now and the end of the season. They just happen to have a disastrous December, which has really affected their current league position.
Newcastle just aren't drawing games, are they? I mean, it's like a ridiculously low number compared to last season. Is it three draws this season, I think? And so they so they just haven't picked up those points, you know, every now and again that they need to sort of do. I think that's one reason for the points differential. And that kind of feels like a bit like the sort of the whole identity of the team. They're either winning or they're losing, and we're either feeling great or we're feeling disappointed. And I think if you take a step back, I think some of these games have been really good. I mean, not that we're neutrals, but if you're just looking at those games from outside the team, you would think that Newcastle are kind of playing well, and they've kind of cast off the shackles a bit. I don't think it is the case. I think the case is that they're a work in progress and they haven't quite found a formula that works. I think you go back to the start of the season, it's been like that consistently, whether you include Tonali in that, whether you include the signings they made during the summer. And then, yes, they obviously haven't been able to use January this time as a way of improving things and helping matters. So it's just been a tough, tough spell. But, I mean, I don't care about them conceding as long as they keep winning. I think that's fine. It just, you know, I think they do have to try and find a way of shoring themselves up, though, because I'm just arguing absolutely against what I've just said there, because that means I do care. What was I saying? What am I talking about there?
Taylor and I have probably already discussed it in the podcast and you weren't listening, so it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, just fuck it, just end.
Word salad. There we go.
Words. Just say words. The end.
Are we good? Is that how we're finishing that? Is that how the analysis of Newcastle United v Nottingham Forest is finishing? Is that it?
I think it's important that our listeners get an insight into my brain, and that's an accurate one. So.
Fair enough. Right.
I don't want to be, unlike Eddie Howe, I don't want to be disingenuous about my own brain. So there we go. Just words that don't end in a meaningless spew of word vomit.
What I will say is George Culkin definitely won't be fit for the next podcast. That's...
Taylor, I think I just need to take myself out of the firing line.
I think that might be where it is.
I think I've become I'm the Dan Byrne. I think I'm the Dan Byrne of this podcast.
You need it's a rest, like, George. Let's be honest.
I need a rest. People are saying that there's this young kid on the bench. He's desperate to make a mark.
And he's always performed admirably when he's came in, hasn't he? And he's always done well. So
yeah. Slightly out of position, you know, he's left Newcastle. We're talking about Jacob here, but I think for the good of the team, I have to break several bones in my own back and not appear for a while.
You mentioned the Dan Byrne thing. George, I didn't actually say why you'd driven into Newcastle on Friday.
Well, so I drove into Newcastle on Friday to pick up my Dan Byrne boot, which I bid for in the Newcastle United Foundation silent auction, and I won it.
Fabulous.
So that's going to take pride of place on my wall.
Right, let's have a quick break, lads, and we'll be back in a moment.
Come on, you Maggies.
Right then, chaps, on to Becky Langley's lasses against Burnley.
Potts will take it, a low one. Lavelle saves, but the follow-up is there to be tapped home. And Newcastle take a 1-0 lead. Burnley, I'm afraid, have a little bit of a mountain to climb now. McQuaid turns away from Hamer twice and then gets the pass to Stobbs. Barker will get the shot away, tipped onto the bar, and then Marshall with a back pass. Could be any of about five here. It is touch two, Bailey Gale, and into the net it goes. Comes infield and gets the pass away to McQuaid. McQuaid cuts inside and gets the shot away. And that will surely put to bed any doubts of a Burnley comeback.
I don't think we can overstate how much of a brilliant result this was, George.
Fuck,
absolutely incredible. Took an hour to break the deadlock. Casey Elson did just that, and Paige Bailey-Gale continues her stellar start with Newcastle as well. A brilliant day for the lasses.
Absolutely fantastic. It was just such a massive game. Burnley have been sort of chasing Newcastle down all season. They've been overhauled in the past couple of weeks by Nottingham Forest, but just a massive match, a massive win. I think they didn't have it all their own way. They had to kind of withstand some pressure, but the difference was clinical in front of goal. They were patient, and you know they took their chances when they could. And it's just, in the context of the season, it's massive. Now, Burnley still have a couple of games in hand on them, but they're on 26 points and Newcastle are on 37 points. And they have a 7-point gap over Forest, who also have played one game less. So it's absolutely back in their hands now. So after that hiccup against Forest, it's absolutely back in their hands. It's just been a brilliant response to that disappointment. And yeah, I mean, they're sort of doing everything that the men aren't doing at the minute. They're keeping clean sheets, they're scoring goals, they're clinical, and yeah, brilliant.
Absolutely. New signings as well, adding to the talent already here. Jas McQuaid sealed the result with another goal from the bench. Essentially, she's an academy graduate, isn't she? And she's absolutely on fire at the minute.
Yeah, it's what you need. I mean, so as we've said before, in terms of FFP, Newcastle not affected in terms of the women's team, which is great. So they were able to make four signings last month. And, you know, strengthening from a position of strength, which is an absolutely brilliant thing to be able to do, to have that sort of luxury. And so what you want when you do that is for A, those players to have an impact, and then B, the players who are already here to respond to the challenge to their own places in the team. And so far, so good. As you mentioned, Paige Bailey-Gale has had a brilliant start in front of goal. And then, yeah, Jas McQuaid came on. Brilliant. So many of the players, though, that you could mention after that match, just really exciting.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know now that the Portsmouth game in a couple of weeks is going to be at St James's. It's just come at a great time. So long may that continue.
Absolutely flying at the minute, the lasses. Right then, I think that's just about it. Maybe it's one more point. I've got a really boring note here about a Premier League vote on associated club rules. Who should we go to with it? Chris, Premier League club rules on associated parties. Come on.
Yes, I am the bearer of both boring and negative news, as usual. So this was a two-day Premier League meeting last week, Thursday and Friday, and what came from it was there was a vote, which I think was pretty contentious. I think that by all accounts, it seemed that there was a lot of disagreement within the room, and there seems to be two split camps now in the Premier League. And the vote just about passed. I think there was 12 for, 6 against, and 2 abstentions. And when clubs abstain, you usually need a two-thirds majority. But when clubs abstain, then the two-thirds majority reduces. And Newcastle voted against this alongside other clubs like Man City. But the rule has passed. And these associated party transaction rules already exist, but what this has done is that they strengthen them further and mean that Newcastle going forward with their commercial deals and the like will have to show even greater evidence if they have any deals struck with PIF owned companies, the likes of Seller and Beyond, that they are fair market value. And so really these rules were brought in post takeover, almost immediately post takeover, in some ways, at least some of Newcastle seeders, to restrict them, and seemingly they've become tighter, and that will only make Newcastle's FFP challenges going forward probably even more difficult.
Wonderful stuff. Right then, I think that's just about it, chaps. Have we got anything else nice planned for the rest of the week? Chris, are you off rescuing any more motorists in distress or anything like that?
Well, I was hoping that George was going to donate Dan Burn's boot to me, as you know, for being his saviour, but we'll just wait on that front. I mean, he just owes me so much now, and I will certainly be lording that over him for eternity.
What could RAC be a shortcut for if the final letter stands for Chris? Rescuing automobile Chris. No. Rescuer.
No.
Tell you what, I'm just going to have some time off. I'm just going to lie down in a darkened room for maybe a week. Is that okay?
Yes, absolutely. I think you should definitely do that. I do like the idea of reframing Chris as some sort of superhero, though. I'm very keen on that.
What do you mean reframing?
But no, come on, Chris. Let's be honest. If you were getting mugged, who's the last person that you'd want to turn up?
George.
It was his grin. That was the thing. It's like I rang him straight away because I knew he would come to my rescue, and he did. And it was so reliable, so good. He rang me straight away. Yeah, I filled up on my way. I'm on my way. It's like very, very reassuring. But that, I mean, it was like Jason Tyndall's grin. It was like I just saw his teeth, and it was like I'm never going to be allowed to forget this. And so far, I've been proven correct. I mean, I can't remember, as we've established beyond any reasonable doubt on this podcast, I forget everything, but I'm not going to be able to forget that.
That car appears to be being driven by a Cheshire cat. Right then, that's it. Thanks very much. Cheers, lads. Thanks, Chris, for your time.
You're very welcome. Have a good week, everyone.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much, George.
See you in 7 days' time and not before.
Beautiful stuff. Right, get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X, and email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. We'll speak to you later on in the week. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, take care. Goodbye.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.